Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Really excited to welcome our next guest, first time ever on the show, Matt Manoogian, who is the Director of Research for Sports Information Solutions. They've got the SIS Football Rookie Handbook, which he edited. So a lot of work going into preparation for the draft. And Matt, I got to know, is the draft like a holiday for you, like Christmas?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, as a scout, we used to always joke around that it's like you finally get to open up the presents. And to some extent, that happens when you're actually drafting them. You find out who you're going to get. But then when you bring them in for the mini camps and you really get to see them kind of on the hoof, as we say in scouting parlance, it's definitely exactly like Christmas.
How much have you seen the scouting department and the scouting role change over the course of your time, not just when you were with the Saints and the Browns, but now working as someone who puts together the information for teams?
Yeah, you know, it's pretty interesting, you know, in terms of like the scouts that are working for teams, you're seeing scouting staffs get younger and get a little bit bigger, which I think is kind of interesting as you keep an eye on that. And then in terms of what we're learning as scouts is that things that used to really matter a lot, like quarterback height, obviously is a big one. That sort of thing is really not as important anymore. We're starting to do a better job of connecting the traits that actually matter and are predictive of success. So one that I love to talk about is quarterback accuracy rather than arm strength. Those sorts of things are more predictive of success, and so we're being more tuned in to looking at those things. So it's kind of a golden age that I think that's coming, that's come along with this kind of, everybody's got access to the film right now. You can look up the All-22 and you can find it. So having that sort of access amongst not just all of the teams, but also amongst all of the fans and all of the media, I think it raises everybody's game.
Well, if that's the case then, and QB height is not nearly as critical as it used to be, but accuracy is more important. You've got one quarterback, one very high-profile quarterback, who's available in this draft out of Oklahoma, Kyler Murray, the Heisman Trophy winner. If the height isn't as critical, how do you rate him then on the other stats, the other areas where you believe they are more critical and better predictors?
So in our draft guide, the Football Rookie Handbook, the SIS Football Rookie Handbook, we break it down, and we actually have Kyler Murray and Dwayne Haskins tied as the top grade. We have Dwayne Haskins 1, Kyler Murray 2, but they're both at the 6.8 grade. And that 6.8 grade, that corresponds to the NFL-style scale that I learned when I was with the Saints and with the Browns as a scout, where a 6.8 would be like a solid starter. You know, once you get to the 7.0 range, you're talking about all pros, pro bowlers. When you're in the high sixes, that's a very good player. So we think those two guys have opportunities to be really good starters. After that, I think there's a huge drop-off. One kind of stat that I think is really crazy that just goes into how effective on the field Kyler Murray was this year relative to all the other quarterbacks in the draft. We have a statistic called expected points added. So we're familiar with talking about yards, touchdowns, and interceptions, but if we put it all into the context of points, how many points were you responsible for on all passing plays and quarterback running plays? There were three quarterbacks with more than 100 expected points added this year. Dwayne Haskins was number 3 at 137. Will Greer is number 2 at 140. Mm. Kyler Murray is number 1 at 237.
Whoa.
So, yeah, it's just absolutely off the charts where he was in terms of his performance on the field this year. So there's a lot of upside there with him.
So then, without the numbers, as a scout, you're telling me this is a guy who you would expect to be a top flight starter?
Yeah, I think that when you look at him from a scouting perspective, you see he's got a great arm, you see he's got great feet, you see he's got an ability to process quickly and make decisions. He's definitely a dual threat type of player who can run the ball and pass the ball, and he's very accurate, you know, kind of like these Drew Brees, Baker Mayfield, Russell Wilson, get the ball out quickly, almost more like a shortstop than like a traditional quarterback. He's a point guard. He's one of these guys. So I think there's a lot of upside there. I think the risk really with him, not so much his height is what concerns me, because I think in the modern NFL, in a system that you're going to play him in, it's going to be a lot of shotgun, and he's shown an ability to throw the ball over 6'5" offensive linemen in college and even in high school, if you look at some of his teammates that he's had. But I think what I worry about is the frailty. And just with a quarterback where he might be on the move a little bit, you know, from anybody from Pat White to RG3, that's something that you got to worry about when you have a quarterback who likes to run like that.
Mm. Matt Manoogian is a former scout in the NFL with both the Saints and the Browns, and now is the director of research and football at Sports Info Solutions. And they've got this incredible tool called the SIS Football Rookie Handbook. I've got it. It is a wealth of information. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. So then other than the height, what's the biggest difference, even though you gave them both high grades, between Murray and Haskins?
So I described Murray a little bit. When I look at Haskins, I look at somebody who's less of like kind of a boom or bust prospect. I could see Murray really going on. He's got that it factor where you could really see him being a star. I don't see that kind of upside with Haskins, but I also see a higher floor when you look at him. I think there's a slimmer range of outcomes that you look at with him. Not a very good athlete at all. Not somebody who's going to be running around a lot. And he's much better on the quick timing, get the ball out of his hands quickly, throw short yardage throws, West Coast type quarterback, rather than somebody who's going to be able to, you know, either get the ball down the field or run around with it a lot. So it's going to be a particular type of system that he fits in, but at the same time, he's shown a real proficiency in doing those sort of things, shows an ability to understand what the defense is giving him and make good decisions. So I really like both of these guys a lot, especially relative to the other quarterbacks in this draft.
Obviously, quarterbacks get a lot of attention, though we're unlikely to have five selected in the first round as we did a spring ago. But what are some of the other positions, even specific players, who rated really high when you compile all the numbers?
Yeah, I mean, rightfully so, in terms of not as many quarterbacks going in the first round this year. Last year was a really special year, and I think, you know, all those guys have a chance to be really good quarterbacks in the NFL. This year's all about the defensive line. Our number one player in the draft kind of by far kind of blows away the competition was Quinnen Williams, the defensive tackle out of Alabama. Now, you got to remember, we put out the Football Rookie Handbook in February. You know, one thing I love about this book as a scout is that it's got your February board before you're clouded by all the combine stuff and the measurables and pro days and all the different nonsense that we hear about. This is just what the players do in college. What do they look like as prospects, as football players? And Quinnen Williams, before anything, we had him as the top guy. He ran a 4.8 as a 300-pounder at the combine. So that just gives you an idea of the sort of athleticism. It's all about his first-step explosion when you look at him. He's got power. He's scheme versatile. He can play in a one-gapping scheme, a two-gapping scheme, so 3-4, 4-3, whatever you want to do with him. I think he's the biggest difference maker. And then looking back at the, you know, right behind him, I like all the other defensive linemen in the top of this draft. I love Nick Bosa. I love Ed Oliver. And then guys really interesting off the edge, Josh Allen, Montez Sweat. That's really the position group I look at that I get the most excited for.
When you were with the Saints and the Browns, which were the factors, which were the parts of the research that carried the most weight?
So everything starts with the film. I would say that, you know, the film is the bulk of the evaluation. That's your meat and potatoes, and it's your sides also, really. You have to have a consensus about the film and what the player is when you look at him and understand how he's going to fit into the sort of vision that you have for him in your program. So that's number one thing, but there's a lot of other things that fit into it too. The medical is an important piece of it, where there'll be times where your doctors will tell you, hey, he's got a degenerative condition, we got to take him off the board. You know, Montez Sweat, a guy I just mentioned, he's got a heart condition, and you know, I hope it doesn't affect his draft status too much. I think he can be a special player. Even more importantly, I hope it doesn't affect his career. But this could be a sort of situation where a team ends up getting a steal, because players like this, you know, you look at a Jalen Smith on the Cowboys now, players sometimes drop because of these injury things, and they end up being able to recover from them okay. So the injuries, the character is absolutely huge. It's not just the character in terms of does he have off-field incidents, but what's his football character? Mm. What is this guy going to bring to our team in terms of leadership? That's one of the most important traits when it comes to quarterbacks, and that's, I think, a reason why Baker Mayfield was able to be successful. You can say what you want about, you know, some of his antics, but in terms of the way he leads his football team, I don't think there's ever a question about that.
Matt Manoogian is the director of football and research with Sports Info Solutions, and they've got the Football Rookie Handbook. It's a really cool tool that is designed to make you the GM, so it's not just for football peeps. It's also for fans who want to get involved. It's after hours on CBS Sports Radio. Another position that we're hearing a lot about in this draft is wide receiver. Who are a couple of wide receivers that caught your eye?
Yeah, we're always going to talk about the wide receivers, and we had three guys kind of tied at the top of our ranking. The guy that I like the most is N'Keal Harry out of Arizona State. This is a big receiver, a go-up-and-get-it type, you know, your power-forward type receiver. Ridiculous hands, great run-after-catch ability, and he's got a lot of the analytics to match it. So not somebody who I think has been a name that people maybe have been talked about as much as some other guys, but somebody I really like there. And then there's two other guys. The teammates from Ole Miss, you got DK Metcalf and you've got AJ Brown. I think both these guys are really interesting. I'm not as interested in DK Metcalf on the sort of high end. I don't think of him as sort of like a top 10 prospect like some people were talking about around the time of the combine, but I do see him as a very good, very high upside receiver, kind of an interesting guy when you look at the analytics, because there are some conflicting things in terms of his, you know, ridiculous upside and measurables, but then some of the limited production and the injuries that he's been through. His teammate, A.J. Brown, I think is a really interesting guy to slide in there into a slot. And then you also look at guys like Marquise Hollywood Brown, and is interesting in this draft. There, Deebo Samuel from South Carolina, and the list goes on. So more depth in the receiver class than what I would call high-end talent. I don't know if there are a lot of guys I'd really want to be thinking about in the first round, and certainly not at the high end of the first round. But then as you get deeper into the draft, you know, running backs and receivers, these guys tend to exist. They tend to be left on your board late in the draft, and I think you can get some really good value at those positions later rather than earlier at those two in particular.
So how much less stressful is it watching as someone who does the information, the work beforehand, as opposed to being in a war room or being a scout whose maybe livelihood depends on your evaluations?
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you, it's still my job, so I'm still interested and I'm as tuned in as ever. And you don't really learn anything on the draft. You know, you find out where people go, but you don't actually find out who was right and who was wrong. I remember being a rookie scout and I didn't have a very high opinion of Justin Pugh, who was the Giants draft pick out of Syracuse. I thought, you know, he's maybe a late second round type guy. But I didn't see him as really upgrading the offensive line. Giants took him in the late first round, and I remember a scout said to me, "Oh, how does it feel to have your first miss?" And I said, "You know, hold on, let's pump our brakes. We don't really know who hits and misses until we find out how they play out in their careers." So you know, we only learned so much tonight, but definitely, in New Orleans, it was fascinating watching the process and how Mickey Loomis and Sean Payton collaborated, and it was interesting. In Cleveland, it was frightening because they kicked us out of the draft room, and it was the owner talking to homeless guys and us finding about it on TV and not following our recommendations at all. So that was very stressful, yes.
Things have definitely changed in Cleveland now.
Yeah, things seem to be better. We'll see. You never know. The owner's the same, and I always want to point sports fans back to the owners of their favorite teams, because that's usually going to dictate an outsized amount of what goes on. But certainly, they have a bunch of things in order now in Cleveland.
You can follow Matt on Twitter at Matt Mano, M-A-N-O, and Matt Manoogian is the director of football and research, and the SIS Football Rookie Handbook is amazing. I've had a chance to look through it, to read. It's really cool, Matt, so thanks so much for a couple of minutes.
Thank you for having me. You can get the book on actasports.com. It's actasports.com. Or since the draft is right around the corner, you can order it on Amazon. It's available on Prime. There's a Kindle version you can download right now. It's the perfect draft day tool.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
People ask me all the time what my sleep schedule is. And I tell people it's got to be the number one question I'm asked. At least as many times as I get asked, how did I get into sports and sports radio? So my sleep pattern generally is from 8 o'clock a.m., 8:30 a.m., depends on how long I read before I fall asleep on my book. And I'm not kidding, I do generally fall asleep on my book face first. And then maybe 3:30, 4 o'clock. If I can sleep until 4 o'clock, that's awesome. It very rarely happens. Anyway, so that's when I wake up, though, is 3:30, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. The dog has to go out. She's Yeah, she's not super patient, though sometimes I can get her to go back to sleep. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll take your questions for Ask Amy Anything, which is coming up next following the update with Jay Berman here on CBS Sports Radio. So on our show Twitter, After Hours CBS, or on our Facebook page. So I woke up a little bit early on Tuesday afternoon because my dog had to go to the vet. So needed to get my coffee. I can't function without the coffee when I first wake up. And I'm outside getting the dog in the car and getting my stuff in the car and getting ready to hop into the car to drive to the animal hospital. And all of a sudden I smell something that's a little bit funny. And I'm thinking, what is that smell? And I realize it's mulch. So I start looking around and I realize my flower beds have been completely mulched. Not by me. I was sleeping. And then I start investigating further. And I realize, now when I had gone to bed, I swear to you, when I went to bed on Tuesday morning, my front yard looked like a jungle. In fact, I came back from walking the dog and I almost did a face palm and thought to myself, oh my gosh, the neighbors are going to ask me to move. Because we had brown in the neighborhood. And then all of a sudden there's been a bunch of warm weather and lots of rain. And so my front yard, which is mostly weeds, had turned into a jungle in the span of the last several days. And I had procrastinated over the weekend. I didn't feel like doing yard work. And it was very obvious that I had done nothing. So on Tuesday morning, when I went to bed, my front yard was a jungle. Now back to the afternoon, I smell the mulch. I start looking around. All the sticks have been picked up. I don't know where they went. My yard has been mowed. All of the flower beds trimmed, the bushes trimmed, and all of the flower beds completely mulched. Everything was trimmed, mowed, edged, and mulched. And I have no idea who did it. So I think, okay, well, maybe I rent the house. This is really out of character for my homeowner. But I thought maybe my homeowner went ahead and did the spring cleaning, which is generally a condition of me signing a new lease. But my lease is not up until the end of June. And we haven't even talked about a lease. But he wouldn't have done it himself because he doesn't live in the area. He lives in Boston. And so I get in touch with my property manager. And I said to her, hey, do you know who came and did the yard work at the house today? She had no idea what I was talking about. So she said, well, maybe the homeowner did it as a surprise. Like, that doesn't sound like him. Usually when we agree to repairs or any type of thing like that, it takes months for him to actually follow through. So he's the complete opposite. Plus, it's April and my lease isn't up until July. So she has no idea who did it. I have no idea who did it. I just know that my yard looks amazing. Like I actually hired someone to do my lawn, except I didn't. So that's kind of cool to wake up and have, and it took me a few minutes to remember, but to wake up to this awesome gift, my entire yard mowed, trimmed, edged, mulched, and I didn't even hear it. I was sleeping. How crazy is that? Someone's running the mower right beneath my bedroom window. I had no idea. And I actually left the windows open when I went to sleep because it was a beautiful morning. So I'm very thankful. It was a really cool gift to wake up to, and it makes my life a whole lot easier. But I don't know if I'm supposed to leave some money for someone. I don't know if it was supposed to be an anonymous gift or if someone got the wrong yard. That's a definite possibility. It could have been a landscaper who was supposed to be in a different yard in my neighborhood, and the crew got the wrong yard. I mean, my neighbor's yard does look a little bit rugged right now. So maybe the landscaping crew was supposed to go to the next yard over. Oops. Or maybe it was just a miracle. And I'm blessed. I mean, I am. But yeah, you should have seen me. I'm outside getting ready. I'm kind of in a daze. What is that smell? Wait, why is there mulch in my yard? My mom said, are you sure that it was like that when you went to bed? Meaning if it was really bad, of course. I remember thinking, oh no, someone's going to leave me a note on my car saying, clean up your yard or move out of the neighborhood. Anyway, now it looks so pretty. So thank you to whoever is the kind soul who ordered a complete overhaul of the jungle in my yard. It's pretty awesome. All right. You don't have to ask me about my yard work now, but you could ask me about pretty much anything else. So on Twitter, After Hours CBS, or on our Facebook page, I got to go record a CBS Sports Minute. P.S. You guys are awesome. Thanks for all your tweets. You're sending me a lot of them. Still most of them about Jamie Baker than anything else, but also about Damian Lillard.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
I feel as though my adrenaline is finally wearing off. I don't know if that's the case, though. Maybe your questions will keep me fired up. But, man, I've been floating through the first 2.5 hours of this show. And then going back the 3 hours before that, I was hyperventilating. So it's been quite the range of emotions in the last 8 hours. Man, a lot has happened. 5 series ending on the ice and on the hard court and all kinds of drama. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Some of you are sure that I'm going to get a bill for the yard work. I don't care. They can send me, whoever did it can send me a bill all they like, but I'm not paying it. It's not my request that you did my yard. However, I am grateful. Thank you so much for the time and effort you took. And the fact that you were super quiet about it, because I didn't even know it was happening right below my nose. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Thanks for your questions for Ask Amy Anything. It is our hump show, and Chris is ready to go.
That I am. We will start with Alicia checking in. She uses the hashtag AskAmyAnything, so she gets bonus points and first dibs. She wants to know, what is the most heartbreaking loss you've ever called as a broadcaster?
Oh, gosh. There are a couple of NCAA games that I've called in college basketball that were painful for the team that I was working with at the time. The Hartford Hawks is the team I traveled with for 8 years, the women's basketball team. So those were definitely painful, but the team wasn't necessarily expected to win in the NCAA tournament. One particular game, though, was in the conference semifinals, and it was the year in which the Hawks had climbed into the national rankings for the first time ever. They were in the top 25. They'd had this incredible season, really long winning streak. Their top player, who, you know, would have been part of the WNBA, this is late in the conference semifinals, and they're up big. They're up huge. I mean, this is a game in which you just hope no one gets hurt. Well, their best player is driving to the hoop on a steal and a breakaway layup, and she gets shoved from behind by a guard who can't catch up with her and can't block the shot, just shoves her. So she goes flying into the support, you know, the support underneath the backboard, and tears her ACL. And so from that point on, even though Hartford, again, was a ranked team and ended up getting an at-large bid into the NCAA tournament, everything looked different. Not to mention she was a senior. That was her last opportunity to play, and she had worked so hard to get the team in position to have a higher seed. And so they didn't end up winning the conference. They lost in the conference championship, though, again, got an at-large bid. But everything was different after she tore her ACL. And again, as a senior, it was heartbreaking for her. So I'd say that loss, because of the implications and how it changed what might have been a real run in the NCAA potential. They were the team at that time, the coaching staff, were thinking Sweet 16 to win a couple of games and get to the school's first ever Sweet 16. But without Erica, it wasn't possible.
We'll stay on a similar theme here. Mariko checks in. He says he's heading home from the Shark Tank.
Boom!
So have you ever been to a Game 7?
One. I've been to one Game 7, and it was actually one that I was thinking about as I was watching the Maple Leafs and the Bruins, because it was a Game 7 in Boston in 2004, so it was before the lockout, and it was a game between the Bruins and the Montreal Canadiens, and it was a really tight game. For a good portion of it, it was scoreless. And then in the third period, the Canadiens scored a goal. And I just remember the tension building in that moment. And then, of course, the angst inside Boston's arena, inside the Garden. I don't remember if it had that same name back in 2004. But it was a moment in which there was so much emotion and pent-up emotion, and then Montreal ended up tacking on an empty net goal. But yeah, that was the Game 7 that I attended, April of 2004, and then the NHL went on an extended lockout after that, and yeah, it was just a different NHL when they resumed from that work stoppage. But yes, That was my one Game 7 experience. I've done Stanley Cup Final games. I've done other playoff games in other sports, but that's my only Game 7 experience was Bruins Canadiens in 2004.
Are you ready to put on your gardening hat? JD has a question
sure.
for you. He says, do you have any tips on getting rid of weeds in my flower beds?
No. I fight an eternal battle with weeds, so no.
Well, him too.
Absolutely not. People tell me to spray them. People tell me all kinds of things that you can do, but I just pull them out. That's what I end up doing. So, no, I have absolutely no tips because my yard is always a weed fest.
Is that the single most frustrating part of your yard work when you get around to it?
Well, I hate weeding. I don't like the fact that I always end up with grass in my hair. I don't know how that happens either. There's always debris in my hair. So I'm not a huge fan of yard work, but it's like running. When it's done, I am overjoyed, and I feel so good about myself and about my life after I do it. But yeah, no, I always end up with bug bites and stuff in my hair, and I don't know what it is. My shoes are green.
Do you have special gardening shoes that you wear?
I do. I have a pair of old sneakers that are my lawn mowing shoes. As long as there's no snakes or spiders out there, I'm all right.
Have you ever encountered one? That would be awful.
A snake in a yard? Sure. But the worst one was in my basement. It was one that was in my basement in the wintertime, and I briefly considered going upstairs, locking the door, and never going in the basement again. Instead, I had to go down there and get it somehow. I did. It's a crazy story, but...
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. That is a tease if I've ever heard one there. But I guess we'll save that one for another
I was
day.
Screaming. Involuntary screaming, for sure.
Like Game 7 Sharks screaming?
Yes, that kind of screaming. A different kind of stress.
Dustin checks in. He wants to know if you have any...
Was I screaming? I don't know what you're talking about.
No, I don't know what anyone's talking about. No.
I thought those rooms were soundproof.
I guess there's a decibel level that if you reach it.
I probably did.
Dustin wants to know if you have any interest in seeing the new Avengers movie.
No, I don't. I'm sorry. I'm not a Game of Thrones person. I'm not a superhero person much, though I did like some of the Batmans and the Supermans. I also liked Wonder Woman. I don't know if that's Avengers or not. I don't know which superheroes are which. I'm sorry.
Be DC.
Okay,
be
so
the other one.
Right, so I apologize. I'm not great with the superheroes. So no, I won't. You know what? My family every now and then will get me to watch some of those. I feel like there are so many of them, though. How can you possibly keep up?
10 years worth. This is the 10th anniversary. It's also the runtime they announce is over 3 hours for this movie. So we're going to have to strap in for that one.
I'm going to have to wait for Star Wars to come out for my next 3-hour yes. appointment with the theater.
Yes, exactly. Brian also has a movie-related question. He checks in and wants to know, what is the most tear-jerking movie you've ever watched?
The Notebook. I cannot, and Terms of Endearment, which is an older one that my mom let me watch when I was a kid with her. I don't know if I was like a little kid, but she let me watch it with her, maybe when I still lived at home. And those two, I cannot. Beaches is another one. But Terms of Endearment, which is when the daughter gets cancer. Oh my gosh, I will never forget watching that for the first time. But The Notebook too. I mean, I blubber all the way through that movie. Blubber like a baby who's bawling. I can't. Even I've seen it like 10 times, but I still cry every single time. And I also cry at the end of Return of the Jedi, no matter how many times I've seen it, but at least I don't bawl. I just get teary.
Do you have like an annual appointment for The Notebook? Like, you know you're going to get it in at least once or twice.
No, I have to be in the mood. Because it floors me. It makes my face all puffy, and then I can't breathe, and I can't be going anywhere after that. So no, I just it has to strike me. The mood has to strike me. But that for sure is one of them.
So Ryan checks in. He says, if you have all the money in the world and you are planning to buy an American sports team, NBA, NHL, MLB, or NFL, which team would you buy?
Oh,
why?
Gosh. All the money in the world? That's a lot of money. It would probably be the Boston Celtics just because that's my first love in sports. Going back to the 80s when I was a kid and I fell in love with the Larry Bird, Dennis Johnson, Danny Ainge, Kevin McHale, Robert Parrish lineup. I mean, that's why I'm in sports, is because of those Boston Celtics. It's why I decided at 16 years old that I was going to be a sports broadcaster, NBA play-by-play announcer, which is still the ultimate dream job. That would be the franchise. That would be the team. And then I could also do the play-by-play. So it would just be like a win-win.
Would you still do radio, or would you put yourself in the TV booth?
No, I'm a radio girl. I'm a radio junkie. TV is not my jam. I do it when I get asked because it's good to have that skill. and because it's better money generally than radio. But I'm a purist at heart when it comes to play-by-play, and that's radio.
So you'd kick out Sean?
I wouldn't kick out Sean. Sean is the best of the best, but at some point I'm thinking he might want to retire.
So Chuck, he has a two-pronged question.
It could be
here.
A three-person booth. Me, Sean, and Cedric Maxwell.
Although with some of Cedric's calls, I don't know if there's room for a third voice in there. He pretty much leaves everything on the table.
Stepped on my little bitty baby toe.
Perfectly said. Chuck has a two-parter here. He wants to know what or who do you consider your best interview of all time? And then would you ever want that person to co-host a show with you?
It has nothing to do with my want of a co-host. It's the boss's decision, and I agree with the bosses when they say that I'm better solo, and it's mostly because I'm a facilitator when I get into groups, meaning I want everyone to be included, I want everyone to talk, I want everyone to feel loved, and so I'm the one who then gets everyone else involved by asking them questions. So what happens is I subvert my own opinions, and I'm not as strong with my own opinions because I'm concerned about everybody else in the room, making sure they have their say and they're comfortable. So as a host, it's better that I'm solo, but that's a boss's decision, not mine. If they put me in a two-person show, I would work in a two-person show. In fact, the draft show we're doing on Thursday evening is going to be a two-person show. The best interview I've ever done? Gosh, that's hard. I'll say two of the most poignant and compelling, unforgettable interviews I've done. Nick Boynton, who's a former NHL player, this was not that long ago, here on CBS Sports Radio, where he talked about his struggles with all of the side effects of traumatic brain injuries and the fact that he would give back his Stanley Cup championship if it meant that he could not have the wild mood swings and not have the awful side effects that come with repeated concussions. His story is, it's so painful, but it's so brave that he will share it. And then also Dominic Mociano. And this goes back to before USA Gymnastics was completely exposed for the Larry Nassar situation. It was before the court case. It was before the hundreds of women came forward. But she took us inside USA Gymnastics and described a culture that I had not heard of before. And she's been ostracized and blackballed by the governing body of the sport that she loved and one which she was so successful performing with. And so those two interviews, both on CBS Sports Radio, Pete Carroll popping on the phone one time when we're in the Seahawks locker room. I had no idea. All of a sudden, my producer's handing the phone to me and saying, "It's Pete Carroll." I mean, that was kind of crazy, too. But in terms of impactful interviews, Dallas Braden, after he pitches a perfect game on Mother's Day, talking about his mom, I talked to him the moments after. So those are some that stick with me.
Jim checks in. He has a very interesting question. I'm very interested to hear your answer to this. What's more attractive, facial hair or clean shaven?
Well, the guy has to be attractive, but if I don't think he's attractive, that it doesn't really matter what he does with his facial hair. I'm generally a clean shaven girl. That sounds weird. I'm generally a fan of clean shaven, but I don't mind trim facial hair. I'm not a huge fan of out of control beard Joe Thornton. Like that. I love Joe Thornton. He's my favorite hockey player of all time, but I don't know if I could deal with the playoff hockey beard the way that he, or James Harden crazy beard either. That's not my favorite. Yeah, I'm okay with a little facial hair, but I generally prefer the clean shaven look if I have a choice. But you know what? When I'm happy with a guy and if he's happy with me, if he wants to have facial hair, then that's not a deal breaker. I mean, guys have asked me in the past and I've said, whatever you like, whatever is, you know, whatever makes you happy. Because opposite, if we're talking about opposite roles and roles being reversed, I don't know that I'm necessarily going to change my hair based on what a guy thinks. So I don't expect him to change his hair or facial hair based on what I think. Though it's nice every now and then to have some input. Interesting. Did I answer that the right way?
Well done.
Oh, okay, good. Woo! Passed the test. The guy says I passed the test. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.